Hello, and welcome to The Catbird Speaks, the podcast for the Catbird Seat blog, the White Sox affiliate for the ESPN Sweet Spot Network. In Arizona, I am Matt Adams, and joining me today in lovely Elkhart, Indiana, James Vegan.
Hello. It's great here. I'm here by choice.
Everybody is, I'm sure of it. In Chicago, Illinois, our only contemporary that's actually living in the city in which our team plays, Kat Garcia.
That's me. I'm not here by choice because it's so awful and I'd rather be in Elkhart, Indiana.
We have an Arby's.
We have numerous Arby's in Chicago.
Where do you live? What neighborhood do you live in?
I live in Humboldt Park, but I'm in East Humboldt Park, so I have less of risk of being shot when I come home at night.
I suppose that's fair.
Yes. But, I mean, this is Chicago. I risk getting shot every day.
I mean, I live in a town where everyone is armed to the teeth. I'm at risk of probably being accidentally shot just from an accidental discharge, like my neighbor cleaning his, like, gun collection or something like that.
Yeah, no, there was a couple of months ago, there was a shooting on my block, actually. It was like a drive-by, and I live in a basement with a lot of windows in the front, so me and my neighbor were talking about how one day I'm just going to get hit by a stray bullet, like, coming through my window, and it's just going to be a total accident.
Is there as much giggling in that conversation as there is right now?
Yeah, actually, I mean, this is just how we talk. I mean, there's shootings all the time. There was, like, police on my block last week, and we were all just out there drinking our coffee, just like watching.
That's life, you know. Sometimes you get shot and sometimes you don't.
Well, with that kind of ominous beginning, let's talk White Sox baseball.
Kat, you were at Sox Fest.
Yes, the whole weekend, all 3 days.
And was it full of inspiration and good cheer?
It was full of a lot more good cheer than I had expected, to be honest. Everyone seemed optimistic, considering the outcome of last season, I would say.
Han and company weren't really read like the Riot Act during like the first night or anything?
No.
Doesn't it work that there's a lot of sessions where like people line up and basically, you know, give them shit? Isn't that kind of like how the whole thing is set up?
Ask for bunts, stuff like that.
Oh yeah, there definitely was a guy who asked why this organization can't bunt. And I just kind of shook my head. And Robin kind of, like, echoed that. He was just like, yeah, I'm asking myself that, too. But, no, there really wasn't an angry mob. I was so surprised because me and Scott Merkin actually were talking on Friday night because, you know, Friday night is the night when it's closed just to the hotel guests. So the fan base, I guess, wouldn't be as angry because it's not as many people. But on Saturday, we were like, oh, man, this is going to be nuts. We're going to hear all these complaints and, you know, why didn't it work out? What are you guys doing? Blah, blah, blah. It really wasn't that hostile at all.
I mean, to that fan's point, the White Sox aren't really very good at bunts traditionally. It's just kind of like they also got really bad at hitting home runs last year, and that's probably a bigger issue.
Probably, yeah. But I think a lot of people seemed really optimistic with Todd Frazier being added. He's going to add a lot of lineup protection was what both Han and Robin were bringing up. And, you know, Brett Lowry is actually going to be the first solid second baseman there's been in a long time. So, since Todd Hito Iguchi, probably.
So you were there for the kind of the opening night media session where Han kind of, you know, stated his piece about where the White Sox are at. What was kind of like the lines that he was giving out to people? It seemed like he was a bit on the defense about the whole free agent market and there kind of being a remaining move yet to make. So my phone is yelling at me. What did he kind of offer?
He kept stressing that he feels that this team is in a better place than they were last year, which in a way I understand that. But at the same time, I'm thinking, so what exactly did you think last year then? If you think that this is a better position than the White Sox were in after all those blockbuster deals that they made last year. You know, there was a big theme between everyone, whether it be Don Cooper, Robin, Rick, that they really want to hit the ground running, as everyone kept stressing. you know, in spring training, Robin was talking a lot about, you know, changing their methods, giving guys more at-bats, giving them more playing time to settle in with themselves, with each other, to kind of work out the kinks more in spring training than having to deal with it in the beginning of April, because they really want to come out strong in that April. I mean, everyone does. Obviously, that's going to be a main theme around baseball, but it was really stressed, I feel, among this organization, especially after what we saw last April. I feel like a lot of us didn't want to admit it, but after that first series, we kind of had that sinking feeling where we knew where this was going and we tried to keep our head up, but deep down we kind of knew where we were headed. And I think they really want to kind of make sure that we don't have that feeling as a fan base or as an organization going through those first few sets of games.
I did wonder last season, if the Sox hadn't started out so crappy and had that, if their April, say, was in like July or August, would the overall record be better? I wondered how much it brought them down that they started out, you know, just not good from the get-go.
Right. I know a lot of people say, you know, it's just a few games in April. It's just a few games in May. And, you know, those are the games that you can really absorb. And that it's a long season. I mean, 162 games is a long season. But those games are kind of when you're building your foundation for the rest of the season. So as much as they may not matter as much as the games in the end of the season do when you're in contention or, you know, in a playoff race, those are going to be the table setters for the rest of your season that are going to kind of give you that boost that you need to be able to absorb games later on in the season.
Yeah, you walk into work differently. If the first 2 weeks at work, everything sucks, the next month you're going to walk in like, this sucks, and you're right. Going to perform differently.
Yeah.
I think last year would be a pretty good example of the way they started kind of really made it murky what they should do on the trade market and might have handcuffed them a bit. I mean, I don't think it completely just, like, exonerates them from the weird, like, middle ground they found themselves in, but it's definitely not helping.
Yeah.
I'm curious to think if Han is kind of saying that they're in a better place from last year, like, with hindsight, from where they actually were last year, because it wasn't like he was touting out last year, hey, you know those 78 win projections? They're probably pretty spot on. Like, don't get too excited or anything.
I think what he was more referring to was the middle infield, you know, the disparity there. Because, you know, we had Connor Gillespie at third base for a while. And then, you know, second base was just kind of open to interpretation for whatever was happening there. Now we got Todd Frazier, Brett Lowry, and the only thing that I'm seeing that I feel is an issue is now we have third and second kind of figured out. Now we have this questionable body at shortstop with Tyler Saladino.
Yeah, and James and Nick talked about it a bit yesterday with if as long as something is done in right field, you can kind of afford to have the shortstop be, you know, the ninth hitter and not perform very well offensively, but you just can't hide too many of those guys. So if he's just the one guy that can't hit, then that's okay. That's a major league lineup still.
Like last year, you had Saladino, you had Carlos Sanchez, you had Tyler Flowers, all being guys who were like, oh, I kind of love what they do with the glove. You know, if you stick them at the bottom of the lineup, it's not so bad. But like they made up an entire inning by themselves. And as Nick was kind of saying, you can really just like cruise through like the three of those plotted together.
So the Sox still had really bad defense, even though that was the case last season. And I don't know, are we really all that confident at Brett Lowry? First off, can someone tell me, is it Lowry? Is it Lowry? What's the official Brett situation here?
Everyone was saying Lowry, but Lowry, I always think it's Lowry. I don't know.
We'll go Lowry. So
maybe it'll be like permanently a mystery, like how the stadium PA always called out Alice Ramirez.
I thought that was a Hispanic thing. You know, the X is always pronounced not as hard as normally. I don't know. I'm the one here who's Hispanic. I should know, but I don't.
I mean, I wouldn't discount that at all, but I just don't know why we didn't just agree on something to call him.
The story was that, I guess, the first year it was being mispronounced as Alexi, And then when he set him straight, he didn't have as good of a go to start the season, and so they kind of tried to get superstitious with it.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
That is really messed up. Well, now we don't have to worry about it. The Padres can deal with that.
You're not hitting. Your name is Alex now. That doesn't seem like a good way. That's not a good system.
Might as well just call him Toby.
Jeez, Matt.
Too harsh?
Just a little. So Han was pretty defensive of that, or pretty dismissive of that three-year rumor.
Oh, yeah. I knew it wasn't at me, but he was very, very aggressive with his response. I mean, literally the second I finished asking that question, he said something along the lines of, "Let me stop you right there. There was no hard limit on," I don't know exactly what he said, but I was like, whoa, assertive, I get it. Like, okay.
There's an interesting dynamic there, because that's something that was repeatedly reported by Bob Nightingale. And
Bob Nightingale, though,
is kind of seen his sources generally assumed to be, if not just Kenny Williams himself, closer to that side of the front office. So it's an interesting dynamic that Han is like very aggressively against that rumor and that was coming through that outlet. I don't know necessarily what's going on there, but it's interesting. That's what I'm trying to say.
Nightingale has not. That would not be the first time he seemingly just pulled something out of his ass.
Yeah, didn't he say some really weird rumor during the winter meetings, like about some player getting traded, and we were all like, and then like 2 minutes later, this player got signed somewhere else, and everyone was just retweeting him. I feel like it had something to do with Ben Zobrist.
Possibly.
Yeah, there was something over the summer as well.
Yeah, then everyone was starting to like go through his timeline and just retweet all the stupid stuff that he said.
He's definitely got sources. It seems like it doesn't necessarily materialize the way it's being portrayed to him. So, was there anything else that Han was particularly pointed about?
I'm trying to think exactly. I mean, I feel like sitting through, first of all, the media session, and then two of the sessions with him and Robin in a row, you kind of sensed that there, I don't want to say there was a dialogue, but he had a lot of answers that were, you know, prompted, they were ready to go, you know, for a lot of the same questions that people had. And he definitely seemed like there was going to be another move, but every time he would kind of bring about this, you know, storyline that there was going to be something else, he then kind of countered that by saying, but if we send out the lineup or the roster that we have in place now, I would feel confident in that. So he kind of was, I don't know, I'm not sure I would wait to expect another move from the way he was talking.
Well, he has to cover his ass to some degree. Like, if they don't end up actually getting anybody, he's not going to be like, he's not going to say this is not the team I wanted to see play this year.
Yeah.
Like, if he promises to walk into traffic if Avisail is the opening day right fielder, then he's in an awkward position when Avisail is running out for right field on opening day.
Oh, that's another thing. I asked Robin about how he felt about Avisail being a starter on this team, and he definitely has confidence in him. That was his immediate response. He was like, I absolutely think that he can be a starter on this team, and that he just has, you know, he still has a ways to go, obviously, is what he was saying, but I'm just wondering how long we want to hold out on that. I know that he has only had one full season so far, but I feel like we're running out of patience with him.
I think if the White Sox were where they were in 2014, and they're in a position of, we're just going to give Avisail another full season to work, I'd be pretty okay with it. It's more of a situation of, if this team is competing now, I would bet the odds on him like improving or becoming a good full-time player as insufficient to go into the season with. If I had a team I wasn't worried about needing to win now, yeah, he hasn't burnt out all hope. He just hasn't gotten off to a start that enlists confidence.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do want to see improvement for him. That would be the key thing that I think could come through and kind of make this lineup just seem more whole. Because right now I feel like it's in a good spot, but I feel like it is just kind of missing something. And he could definitely add that something if he comes through and has a breakout season.
I mean, with the LaRose situation, I still think there's plenty of opportunity where if Avisail is clearly like a new man, there are going to be at-bats for him to show that and kind of increase his opportunities if there's success. So I don't feel like things have completely been written off with him. It just, you can't depend on him.
Yeah, and then Rick did bring up about how run scoring, he said, was like the biggest glaring hole on this club. And then he was looking to improve that internally, which I'm not sure they can entirely do with the prospects that they're putting out right now. I don't feel like they're... Once they added Todd Frazier, that's when I started to feel like, okay, so now we have another power hitter, some protection for, you know, Abreu. Feel like, you know, we can actually say that we're going to be a better run-scoring team at this time.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of that internally comment. Is that like a Tim Anderson comment? Like a...
Yeah, I really wasn't sure what to make of that either.
I'm betting it's not a Rob Brantley illusion.
Oh, God. Some guy came up to the podium and asked Rick where they're at in the pursuit of the next Buster Posey. And this was after Rick and Robin both talked about how hard it is to develop catchers and how they're really trying to, you know, find someone that they can bring up through the system. And then, like, two questions later, this guy's like, so where are you at in the pursuit of the next Buster Posey?
I guess, is his wife pregnant? I think that's where we are as far as monitoring Buster Posey, the next Buster Posey.
That's what I mean. It's a very interesting crowd of people who ask the questions.
I wonder how much of those questions I wonder if there's any sort of review session among the team, the front office, trying to prepare for questions that might get asked, or if they really don't care and go in cold.
I don't know. I feel like there might be, because there were obviously various Carson Fulmer questions, and Rick Hahn pretty much had almost the same scripted answer that was something to the degree of, if Carson contributed to the White Sox in 2017, we would consider that, you know, a fast progression for him. It was something along the lines of that exact answer, just over and over again. And I was kind of like, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's, I'm sure for that, yeah, they want to make sure they're on the same page at the very least. But that's the same line of thinking they gave to Rodon, isn't it?
They did mention, you know, that the organization has been bringing up, you know, Chris Sale came up quick, Rodon came up quick, and they kind of alluded to, do not expect the same thing of Carson Fulmer. That's the other thing that Rick kept stressing, is he kept saying, we've been spoiled with our pitching prospects. So, and then he was stressing also about how the good ones have a way of pressing the issue, about coming up when they're ready and, you know, being very adamant about it. So,
I mean, that's fair. As much as, like, that we think has become a normal behavior, there's, like, as much as I like Carson Fulmer, too, there's no doubt he's, like, the worst prospect of the three. Like, Chris Sale, someone who's, like, was revered as, like, a very top-level prospect at the time, even if they didn't realize he was going to become, like, a Cy Young caliber guy. And Carlos Rodon is somebody who was legitimately talked about as going 1-1 the last 2 years he's in college. So, yeah, it's not fair to necessarily put that expectation of Carson Fulmer, while at the same time acknowledging this is how they operate. So we should know we shouldn't be surprised if he's up in 2016.
Right, yeah.
Talks about that concerning Anderson's timeline?
I specifically asked Rick, you know, if Tyler Saladino proves ineffective early in the season, how long are they going to be willing to wait to bring up Tim Anderson? And he said that right now they're just kind of holding out. They really want to give Tyler Saladino a shot. He kind of sort of mentioned that that was the reason that, you know, they didn't bring Alexi back. He didn't specifically say that, but he did mention that they really did want to give some internal options a shot, and Tyler Saladino was part of that. So I'm not sure if Tim is really an option right now, because he said that, you know, he's a level-to-level guy. He kept using that term. So he kind of wants to give him his full time, I feel like, in the minors before he brings him up.
That seems good. I hope he sticks to that.
I feel like that, too, because even if Tyler Saladino is a train wreck, that doesn't mean that we want to bring up Tim Anderson and have him also just become a train wreck, also because he wasn't ready.
Like, the organization that doesn't develop position prospects particularly well should probably not move the guy who's noted as everyone as being super raw at an accelerated pace.
Right.
Just doesn't seem great. How is the Rick Robin, like, I don't know, say, relationship, interplay? I mean, this is a guy who's been a lot of scrutiny. Him being brought back was something that wasn't necessarily received with open arms last year. But I think, to some degree, he is kind of Rick's guy. So I'm wondering how supportive of him he came across.
He actually did seem very supportive of him, and he kept stressing that he wants to be able to give him enough options to be able to put the best lineup out every night. You know, he was stressing that the deals that he makes are not reflective of Robin. You know, he needs to be able to give Robin the product to be able to create, you know, a winning lineup every night. He did stress too, you know, don't worry about the contracts. Just give the players that are doing the best right now the opportunities to play. I'll deal with the contracts. So it's not like he's going to be stressing him to, you know, oh, this guy is making X amount, so you need to play him as often as possible when, you know, this bench guy is hot right now and sit him. But he did mention that there is accountability for Robin when he does construct that lineup. So I feel like it was kind of a give and take. You know, they're each taking responsibility for their part.
Fair enough. Speaking of coaches, you had quite the conversation with Don Cooper. Seems like it mostly centered around Carlos Rodon, but can you get into what you were able to actually pry out of him?
Yeah, it didn't take much. At first, he seemed a little reserved. I mean, obviously, I don't look like the typical... He seemed like he needed to probe me to find out what I was doing there for a couple seconds, and then he warmed up right away. And he started talking about, you know, how him and Rodon stumbled upon these few things that helped with his command issues. Like I said, he wouldn't exactly go into them much, which I didn't expect him to. But he kept saying how he needed to improve strikes with him, and that we can't expect so much from Rodon coming up right away. He's still a work in progress. He's still young. He's only been up for not even a full season. So for that being said, I think he's doing, I mean, not terrible. And he said, Don Cooper did say that he's looking to the organization to improve all of their guys. He poses challenges for them every day, and he expects them to meet those challenges in order to improve themselves. And, you know, he's just working with all of them to, I don't know, just do the Don Cooper thing that he does. I'm not sure too many of them really need workouts. I mean, well, Eric Johnson and Rodon, I guess, could use the work, but pretty much we only did really talk about Rodon. The conversation, though it seemed long, was pretty quick, and I kind of just let him go. He was kind of just talking and talking.
So he seems suspicious of sabermetrics would be appropriate description of just reading the conversation that you wrote up that goes on our site tomorrow morning.
Yeah, he definitely, when I showed him my credential that said baseball prospectus, for some reason it ended up under baseball prospectus. He was like, what's that? I was like, it's a publication. You know, they work with the sabermetrics and stuff like that. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, no, the numbers, the sabermetrics. He's like, oh, okay, yeah. And he kind of like dismissed that right away.
I would probably, like, just based on the... I remember this one interview with, like, John Mozeliak with the Cardinals, where they had him in his office, and he had just, like, a row of baseball prospectus annuals, like, in his bookshelf behind his desk. I would probably bet good money that Hahn has some baseball prospectus, like, literature in his office, so the fact that, like, Cooper is just completely shielded from it amuses me.
I know.
Just as a great way to let him do what he does and don't, like, clutter his mind.
When I said baseball prospectus, I didn't even think anything of it. I mean, I figured he'd be like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, I know what that is. I may not, you know, regard their work or whatever, but at least I know what it is. He literally had no idea what I was talking about.
He's a special bird.
Oh yeah, some of his lingo, I was like, oh my god, I feel like I'm talking to like my mom or something right now. That whole thing where he was like, you gotta take a few lumps and maybe give a few lumps, and I was like, whoa, this is such a like Cooperism right now. Like, I understand what he's saying, but sometimes I wonder how many people that he'd be talking to would be like, what are you talking about, dude?
Does giving out lumps, like, imply issuing violence upon other people? I don't...
It's a reference to how you like your tea.
Oh. I'm very, you know... Maybe it's a Downton Abbey fan. I don't know. He kept referring to the developments of Radon about stumbling things, which I assume is just him being guarded about what their actual process is. Because if I, like, had a hand in some sort of, like, breakthrough, like what Carlos Radon had at work, I probably wouldn't describe it to my superiors as I stumbled upon it. I'd probably say, like, this is what I'm doing every day.
Yeah, because I asked him, the main thing that I started the conversation with was, in that piece on The Athletic, Sahadev Sharma points out that there was definitely a change in Rodon's release point. So I brought that up, and then we had this whole miscommunication about release point, which Cooper does not use that term. And he kind of, I asked him, was this something that you specifically brought up to him? How did you come upon this? And that's when he started saying the stumbled upon thing. So I was like, oh, so this wasn't really like planned. It just sort of happened. Like,
so he calls it where your arm goes, is how he refers to it.
It was the greatest moment outside of the baseball prospectus part of the conversation where I said release point. And he goes, I will never use the term. And then this is not even an exaggerated pause. He just stopped and goes, where your arm goes. And I was like, okay, all right. And he's like waving his arm around.
That is some seriously bitter stuff.
Yeah, that's why at first when we were talking, I was like, oh, God, he's going to give me a hard time. But after that, he really did warm up, I guess.
A pitching coach who won't use the term release point.
I know. That killed me.
It'd be one thing if he had like a very specific like replacement for release point.
So he literally was struggling to find the words that he was trying to use here.
This just like creates more fear in me that the White Sox will never be able to replace him. Because, like, yeah. It doesn't seem like there's, like, a structured system on which, like, his genius is built upon. It's just, like, everything is just, like, in his head and intuitive.
And taking a few lumps and giving a few lumps.
The filing cabinets in his office are empty.
Yeah, like, the notes that he'll pass down are, like, kind of scribbled and incoherent. Like,
yeah, basically, that's kind of what I gathered from our little, like, five-minute conversation. I was just like, oh, okay. Then we said that stuff is good. I love stuff. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, he seems like an innate feel for the game guy rather than a very structured process that he could like write a novel about, or not a novel, but you know, a textbook.
Oh yeah, definitely. I feel like that too.
Speaking of textbooks, our Ethan Spalding got written up in the Baseball Prospectus Annual. That just came out, mostly to express how depressing the second base position has been for, I guess, the last 15 years.
Yeah, it goes back to, let's see here, I have the annual here. Yeah, it goes back to 2003, starting with D'Angelo Jimenez. And then going all the way through the history of second baseman to the sad days of Gordon Beckham, and then Micah Johnson, Carlos Sanchez, and then it stops. And just leaves you there.
Thankfully.
It's like the Mayan calendar.
Brett Lowry, Lowry's? Who knows? I guess stands as a potential to be like the best White Sox second baseman at least since Tadahito Oguchi left. which is strange since he's basically a converted third baseman who doesn't really have the bat for third base to be like an above average player and is not well regarded at second base. So that's the greatest White Sox second baseman.
That's the question I actually was getting into earlier that I kind of got sidetracked on with the pronunciation of Lurie. The defense stands to be worse because of him, right? I mean, a guy that is not usually playing second base. Do we know anything about this pretty small sample, right, that he's actually played?
I believe so.
Melissa Lockard from Oakland, from scout.com, and also 2080, talked about his defense a little bit on Twitter. He said that he took to the transition pretty well, as far as like he wasn't pouting about it, but that it was pretty inconsistent. He's definitely capable of like some great athletic moments, but also was probably less sure-handed than she would have anticipated, and was just prone to some lapses. So it was kind of odd. Like, it would seem like he has the athleticism for it. It's just the production is not consistently there, which could be interpreted anecdotally as maybe he'll be more consistent if he's just a full-time, everyday second baseman.
Yeah,
and he's got, it's less he's got 80 games there total, basically, in his career. So certainly
yeah, I'm
some comfort
here
level.
Now, he played third base solely through most of 2015 until around August. And then he played a lot of second base with some third base sprinkled in there. But yeah, last year he definitely spent most of his time at third base. So
I think of Lurie the way I probably thought of like Cabrera a lot last year. In that, yeah, there are probably some issues with him. He's flawed. He might not be above average. But there are other things to worry about in the White Sox lineup, and I'm just kind of relieved that I don't have to worry about him being a black hole.
Yeah, he's better than what's been put out there for especially the last 2-3 years. So that's pretty much what I'm happy about.
Ugh, what an appallingly low standard.
I mean, we've been conditioned to have these low standards for the past decade almost.
And not even at that position exclusively.
Oh, God, no. I wanted to hug Todd Frazier when I saw him, you know? Like, you are our savior. You saved us from Connor Gillespie.
I will not stand for this Connor Gillespie slander on this podcast.
Where is Connor these days?
Possibly out of baseball. He was really bad in 2015. Oh, my God.
He went to the Angels.
Yeah.
I remember that, because then I was like, oh, he's just going to pull a Gordon Beckham. He's just going to go there for a little bit, and then he's going to come back, and we're going to have to deal with him again.
I'm pretty sure the Angels DFA'd him after he played a significant hand in tanking their playoff hopes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't make it through the year.
Yeah.
Like, I think he played a pretty significant hand in the comeback win the Sox had over the Angels that was probably pretty disastrous for their second wildcard hopes.
I'm very apprehensive about going into 2016, because right now it's just, it could go either way, but knowing the White Sox organizational luck, it will not tip in their favor. But that could also just be me being, you know, pessimistic, spending too much time around Cubs fans or something, you know.
How bullish are Cubs fans about the 2016 White Sox? I don't know why I want to know the answer to this question, but
they don't care.
That's probably good, since they have a juggernaut on their hands.
That's the thing that I've noticed, and I think we've talked about this before, is the animosity from Cubs fans, definitely not the same as it is from Sox fans. Sox fans hate the Cubs. Cubs fans don't really care what the Sox do.
I mean, if your team is awesome and going awesome for the considerable future, I guess that kind of like petty rivalry really isn't on. Like, if the White Sox were also like a 95-win team, I think that'd be a cooler dynamic for the inner city rivalry, or if they're both kind of like middle ground strugglers, they'd probably feel it more, but they're just in such different places right now.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of people brought that up too at Sox Fest. Like, do you feel pressure from, you know, seeing the Cubs be so successful? And Rick Hahn was kind of just like, no, we're not worried about that. Like, no.
I mean, I would really hate that as well.
The Cubs have their shadow right now.
On like the White Sox, even like it's one thing for them to be worried about like other AL Central rivals, but like the Cubs have just no effect on anything they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as like we complained about, or maybe not a lot, me, but people kind of criticized Lovie Smith of the Bears for worrying so much about the Packers rivalry. But that team was in the division. The Cubs just have nothing to do with the White Sox on a day-to-day basis.
Right, exactly. So it's really not worth bringing it up.
But yeah, people did, because it was Sox Fest, and that's what you do.
Oh, yeah, there were definitely quite a few mentions of the Cubs. We definitely talked during the farm system seminar. Somehow we ended up talking about Chris Bryant and Kyle Schwarber and Addison Russell, and I was just like, what happened? Like, what? And it wasn't even brought up by a fan. I'm pretty sure Nick Capra brought it up himself, if I'm remembering correctly.
On the other hand, if the Cubs being awesome kind of makes the fans demand more from the White Sox ownership, I'm not really going to, you know, fight against that.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's what makes you realize that, like, you should demand more success from your team than a 7-year playoff drought, then sure, go ahead with that.
You know, the one thing that I am kind of worried about that a fan did bring up was, you know, when are you measuring, when do you decide that it's not time for a rebuild or that it is? And obviously Rick Hahn stated that he doesn't feel that with this core in place, this is the time to completely, you know, tear down and build from the ground up. But then he did mention that, you know, if things don't work out in 2016 for reasons that are not, you know, health related or things like that, that of course it's going to be on the table whether or not they should execute a full rebuild, which scares me because if things don't turn out this season, that could potentially mean that we'll see, you know, who knows, a Chris Sale trade or something like that. And I just don't want to see that happen just yet, you know?
Yeah, I would really hope it would be more of a 2-year window, given what they have with Frazier. But I guess if it's like a total flop and they just win like 60 games next year, then the thought of just like selling off all these assets while you have them would probably enter in the conversation. But, you know, I assume someone would have to die on the field for them to win 60 games next year.
Yeah, probably. Or just, like, everybody gets injured at the same time.
So, is there anything else from Sox Fest before we put it away from our minds entirely and worry about something that might involve baseball players playing baseball and not wearing dress shirts at the Palmer House?
Oh, well, some of them weren't even wearing dress shirts, but...
What?
We'll talk about that later. You know, I don't know. I think there were just a few main themes, like I said, you know, coming out of spring training strong, possibly looking at a trade that maybe has to do with Dexter, or an acquisition that has to do with Dexter Fowler, hopefully. The organization having a lot of faith in Tyler Saladino, being happy with the protection and the power that Todd Frazier adds to this lineup. And then all the fanfare that there was for Hawk and his 81 games.
People are excited about him only doing 81 games? Or they just
No, there were actual people that were legitimately, you know, sad.
They
I wouldn't say upset.
Lazy?
There were fans that were just coming up and just, like, offering their stories and thanking him. And I had to listen to the story of how he drives from Granger, Indiana every day forever, it felt like.
As someone who lives right next to Granger, Indiana, and drives to Chicago, like, once a week? That sounds freaking awful, and I understand why he doesn't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, especially at his age. I mean, I know we all quip about him and everything, but, I mean, he's old to do that stuff. And driving late at night after those night games, you know?
Yeah. I'm 28. Really like that sounds guy. Like a way to die to me.
It does. Jason Benetti, I really like him. I got a chance to listen to him and speak and kind of got familiar with him for the first time this weekend, and I'm really excited for that.
Local product, from what I understand. Holman Fossmore?
Yeah. Shout out to HF. I have a lot of friends that live out there and went to HF. Chuck Garfine came from there. Markin came from Fossmore.
People always think Homewood Fossmore is a town, and I think I didn't find out till late that it's actually like the high school between Homewood and Fossmore.
It's technically in unincorporated Flossmoor. Well, I'm not sure if that side of the road is unincorporated, but the other side of the road that, well, the side of the high school that I know is unincorporated Flossmoor. So it's technically more in Flossmoor than it is in Homewood.
These are the South Suburban, like, details that I should probably know as someone who runs a White Sox blog, but it just doesn't come up. Something that I noted from when you were tweeting it, but I forgot to bring up earlier. So you noted the way Han responded to Dexter Fowler questions as being particularly gruff. Now, I guess now that it's almost a week later since he did this and there's still been no movement on Dexter Fowler, it might not be as strong of an indication.
Oh, yeah, it hasn't been a full week yet, though. It has not been a full week.
Like 5-6 days, but go on with what you noted.
Immediately when I asked that question, in the middle of it, when I said, I started with, Dexter Fowler is one of the only remaining free agent outfielders, and he cut in immediately and just goes, he is a free agent. And that's exactly what he said to a guy that walked up to the podium last year stating that Gordon Beckham was a free agent. He cut in and said, he is a free agent, and then kind of wanted to dismiss the question after that. And then when I continued to say, what are your feelings on him, he just said, I think it's best that I not comment on anyone that's not wearing a White Sox uniform at this time, and then looked away and took the next question. So I just found a familiarity there that kind of hit me right away, and I was like, oh, maybe that is an indication.
Why does he interrupt people so much? This is what I'm taking away from this.
Maybe it's just me. Maybe he just interrupts me.
I guess the counter question would be, how much does Han ever really discuss free agents?
Oh, yeah, he was definitely stern about that. This guy came up to the podium, was talking about Cespedes and how he would have been a fit and everything. And Han didn't, like, cut him off, but he definitely sternly was like, I think it's best that that player signed somewhere else. We not talk about him anymore. Let's not address him or something like that. And I was just like, whoa, getting a little sassy there. All right, I like it.
I wonder how upset he really was on each of these, if it was, as he said it was, where they were having conversations up until the minute that word came that they signed with other teams.
I feel like
is he like a throw a book across the room type of guy? Is he throwing BP annuals against the wall when he misses out?
I feel like from, seeing him and speaking with him, he's very calm and he's reserved, but he does have those moments where he kind of is very stern, which could lead to, the idea that maybe, yeah, he does get kind of upset. But he did seem a little, like, crushed whenever people would ask questions about, suspect and stuff. Kind of like, I don't want to talk about it. Let's not talk about that.
Well, that was his claim to fame, too, wasn't it? The negotiator before he assumed the GM role?
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, he was said to negotiate a lot of the contracts. That was, like, his primary role. He negotiated the Panarco contracts.
He is a lawyer, so.
It'd be really great if he was just still practicing while running the baseball team.
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, he'd probably be terrible for his workload, but.
Oh, yeah,
Ryan Jarp would appreciate the discount.
Some guy came up asking him, how do you sleep at night? He was like, well, Lunesta helps. And then he started talking about how he, like, leaves his phone downstairs. So he doesn't check it at like 2 a.m., but that just leads to him going downstairs and checking it, and how if he looks tired, it's because he is tired, and I just felt so bad, but I mean, that's kind of the story of every GM, so it's not just him,
I mean, that sounds more tortured, whereas like Kenny Williams in the club, like doing like pull-ups while watching White Sox games angrily, that looked more like potential for like violence down the road level of like GM angst.
Yeah. That's the thing is, Rick always, like, looks, I don't want to say, like, happy, but he always looks cheerful. You know what I mean? He always has a very cheerful demeanor. He's very polite. I love talking to him. He makes me feel so comfortable. He's so friendly. He remembered me from last year, which, I mean, I just met him in the hallway, and, like, we had an exchange for a couple of minutes, but he remembered me. When he kind of like caught up for a second. He asked me who I was writing for now. I told him that I work with BP and that I was working with you guys, and he like congratulated me. And then we kind of went on to questions, and he seems very genuine, and he's very nice, and definitely one of my favorite baseball people to talk to.
Is this where you reveal that Han actually talked you into a 2-year contract?
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah. He's so charismatic that I now play for the White Sox.
Well, that solves the right field situation, I guess.
Are you saying that I'm better than Avi? Hey, I can wear his jerseys. We have the same last name, so they don't have to reprint any jerseys.
Probably less caught stealings than Avisail. Well, I think I have enough information to not think about Foxfest anymore. Thanks to you, Kat.
I still have more information. There's going to be more pieces probably going into next week. I still have a lot of audio that I haven't totally gotten to yet.
Forget what I said. Soxfest is continuing year-round.
Maybe not for you guys, but for me, I'm still going to be going through. There's still a couple more ideas that I have reeling in my head after that Rodan piece. So, but I think I'm going to need a break for you know, just a couple more days, and I'll get to some more stuff. I kind of want to spread it out, at least.
We'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly like this stuff has an expiry date. Well, for the most
part. Expiry, huh?
You know how it goes.
Well, she said expiry instead of expiration. That's what I was noting.
Are you making fun of me now?
I'm not at all. It's just an interesting
difference in the way certain people speak. Usually I say expiration date, but I just felt like going with something different there.
I said expiry earlier today and thought it was odd that I said it, and then here you are saying it in the same day. It's expiration, though, right? Like, I don't even know where expiry came from.
I've heard people say that before. I never, like, stop to think if they were grammatically correct or morally correct or anything.
I spent a long time today actually trying to figure out where expiry came from without bothering to look it up or anything.
That sounds very futile.
I'm a man of priorities.
What do you do all day?
Mostly that.
So we have anything else we want to cover? I think we're pretty reasonable lengthwise.
Yeah, I think that was the plan here.
Yeah.
Get to the Cat Soxfest stuff, and we've done so.
I hope I got to all of it. I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night, remember things that I should have brought up.
That's how every podcast goes. What's important is that we have Cat's feature, or in-depth article on Don Cooper and Carlos Rodan, going up Thursday morning, so everyone should check that out, and we'll have this podcast going shortly afterwards. So, I guess that's it.